You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun, a Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. You know, you used to only double up on the first part, and now you do the second part, and it's infuriating.
I got to surprise you. I know you hate it, and I don't know why, because everyone else loves it.
It's because, see, for everyone else, what they hear is a perfectly synced version of us talking. But for me, I hear there's a delay because it's on a Zoom, and it drives me fucking insane. It's like, have you ever used one of those apps where it doubles your voice and you can't talk because you're hearing your own voice mm-hmm. on delay? It's like that, except it's hearing your goddamn voice.
Oh, sounds wonderful.
No, not to me. Anyways, this is the world's only Sopranos podcast. All other Sopranos podcasts are lies. So we thank you so much for listening to it. I just, you know, off the bat want to say, hey, give us 5 stars and a review on iTunes. You know, it's something that we need. It's something that helps us out, and it'll help you out, because the more reviews we have, then the better the podcast will get, because then I'll feel encouraged to continue working on it.
Sounds like a threat.
It is a threat, guest. you have not been introduced yet. Anyway, so please go to the iTunes store and give us 5 stars and a review. All right, ladies and gentlemen, today's guest is a very important person. You know her from the Bituation Room on YouTube. You know her from A News Broke on AJ Plus, from TYT. You know her from fucking National Geographic, MSNBC.
Keep going.
And and also, you know her as the woman that I love and who loves me back. Ladies and gentlemen, Francesca Fiorentini's in the studio today.
Oh!
Oh! Gabagool!
Hey! Yay! Yeah, am I the most Italian guest you guys have had on this entire... the entire time you've been on?
Actually, you might be.
I mean, yeah. I'm not actually full Italian.
Yeah, but you're,
my name sounds
is
full
Fiorentini.
Italian. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got me beat because your dad's off the boat and mine's just from California, so.
that's true.
You're half Italian beats mine via passport.
Oh, her dad is hell of Italian.
Although it's I have to say, I think my Italian is closer to the spirit of The Sopranos in that, you know.
Yeah, you have the last name of the bastard son of Sonny Corleone. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Sicilia.
Yeah. We thank you so much. You're actually, I think, our first ever return guest on this podcast.
Oh, I feel honored.
Yeah, and the reason that you are is because today... we're talking about season 3, episode 4 of The Sopranos, Employee of the Month, which is a very special episode of The Sopranos in which Dr. Melfi is sexually assaulted.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing is,
just say raped. I feel like it cheapens it if you say sexually assaulted.
does yeah. it? But it makes me feel better.
So the reason, wait, keep going.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to like how you're going to spin okay. this.
No, it's not spin. It is totally, it's just how it is in life.
If you say sometimes. Sexually assaulted, it could just mean like she got like groped or something. But this is.
Yeah. So it's the one where she was violently. Well, now I've added violently and I want to say sexually assaulted again because I
stop feel, being uncomfortable.
I'm uncomfortable with the R word. And so I knew this was.
I was going to say we need to normalize rape. We don't.
No, no. We should not normalize. No, no. I know what you mean. You mean talking about it in a way that is sensitive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, this is a comedy podcast, first and foremost. We talk about all the, you know, this show's about titties and meat. And but sometimes it's about very serious subjects. And for this one, I was like, well, we definitely need someone who is going to be, you know, like sensitive to the material, and also someone who will not judge me for talking about it out loud. Basically, I feel safe with you.
No, yeah. That's it's important when coddling someone's discomfort with rape.
Yes. To make the man feel better.
To make the man feel better.
Yes.
Usually the aggressor. Yeah, no, that's what it's about.
Yeah. If you get nothing else out of this podcast, it's just get this. Men should feel better about rape and not about talking about it in a way.
Can you imagine if Tony had actually responded like this?
I was just thinking Matt pulled like an Elliot Spitzer where, you know, you bring your significant other on the stage with you to make you feel better about whatever you're going to say.
Yeah.
That's
you mean Huma Abedin?
Well,
you
mean also, I mean,
Anthony Weiner. Am I the Huma to this situation?
You're the Huma to my Weiner. and I'm so glad to have you here. To make me feel better about talking about this very special episode of The Sopranos. But hey, it would not be an episode of Buy Yourself a Gun without the theme song.
Sorry, I forgot that part. You'd think I'd remember to have the theme song queued up.
All right. Someday. Pod. Your mama always said you'd be there. Chosen pod. Pod. Podcast. Pod. Podcast.
Yep. There it is.
Oh man.
Gonna get old.
Never. Funny forever.
Is it the same pod that you repeated or did you actually say different pods?
I it's been so long I don't really remember, but I'm pretty sure I did one pod. I got like the perfect pod.
You got the perfect pod.
I got the perfect pod. And then I just cut and pasted that. And
wow, that must have taken you forever.
It took a long time, and it was I think everyone appreciates the skill involved in my editing, but anyways, hope you all out there enjoyed the theme song. For any first time listeners, weird first episode to start on, bro, because this week we are talking about season 3 episode 4 of The Sopranos, Employee of the Month. Which premiered March 18th, 2001. Vince, what's the synopsis?
No, March. Did you say March 18th?
What did I say?
I think not that. Anyway.
15th.
Dr. Melfi's attempts to steer Tony into behavior modification therapy take a detour when a personal crisis gets in the way. Meanwhile, Ralph Cifaretto, Joe Pantoliano, finds a way to endear himself to Jackie Jr., but not to Tony.
Can I just point out real quick that for the past, I would say, 3-4 episodes in a row where we've been reading off HBO Max's synopses of each episode, they've been cheeky as fuck. Mm-hmm. Notice that on this one, they decided to play it safe.
Yeah, no whimsy this time. What
no
do you
whimsy.
Know?
Yeah. No, you know, no little puns or jokes or anything. No play on words. They were just like, let's just keep this serious. So that's just important to note. Yeah, so like you said, March 18th, 2001 is when this premiered. Vince, what was going on in America when this episode came out?
Oh, are you saying you want to go to the Remember When machine?
Let's take a little trip to the Remember When machine.
Yeah, we need cultural and historical context. That's what we're all
Yeesh.
About.
Walk, walk, teddy, daddy, bop, bop, shoo, bop. Remember
then. Remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
All right, so we're taking the Remember When machine all the way back to March 18th, 2001. Some of the top stories. Carlson is coming to New York. Conservative wag tap for column. This is about Tucker Carlson.
Whoa.
New York Magazine has finally found a permanent replacement for national affairs columnist Laura O'Donnell. The replacement is 31-year-old Beltway insider Tucker Carlson.
Tuckle. Tuckle.
Unique New York. I don't know why that's so hard to say.
Tuckle Fuckle has moved to unique New York to woodchuck chuck a woodchuck could chuck wood.
Ellery Sprayberry is an aerialist.
Ellery Sprayberry is an aerialist.
What? Never heard of that one.
That's just one Vince taught me.
Yeah.
Weird.
The right-leaning pundit who co-hosts The Spin Room for CNN.
Leaning?
Yeah. O'Donnell officially quit his New York gig in December to devote more time to his own talking head career, but he had actually found the every other week columns a grind and had basically quit writing them by September. Boy, this really harkens back to a time when magazines still had money to throw at dipshits.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
and it really says a lot about our media that, Tucker Carlson and Lawrence O'Donnell were our leading cultural commentators in 2001.
Man.
Talk about
so different 20 years later.
Yeah, yeah. 20 years later. Yeah, never heard of either of them.
Yeah, God. And with our very American system of trying to decide which color bat I want to get hit in the nuts with.
yeah, it really is. It's nice to know that there was a time when, Lawrence O'Donnell, MSNBC and Fox News could share byline space, They were like, hey, we love all of you, of your hack voices. Get all the hack voices together in one room.
They still text each other. These guys are homies. Cut from the same cloth.
Yes.
Of a bow tie.
The same monogrammed cape from Little Lord Fauntleroy's School for Wizards.
The saddest thing about this headline is that, like, hey, it's Carlson's coming to New York. And then, he just didn't, die on 9/11. he was so close.
Speaking of deaths, March 18th, 2001, that was also John Phillips from The Mamas and the Papas died on that
day. Damn. Yeah. Holy shit, RIP to a real one.
Survived by his daughter that he was having a consensual sexual relationship with.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. Kind of knew that was coming.
Yeah,
oh.
I mean, kind of hard to...
Yeah, no. Yeah, he is survived by all of the inbreeding that has occurred under his watch.
You can do a lot of things in your life, and if you've had a consensual sexual relationship with your daughter, that's going to be the one that people bring up. And you know what? Yeah. I think that's fair.
Yeah, and in the biz, we call that California dreaming.
wow. Damn. Wow. We're supposed to talk about sexual assault?
This was...
Consensual with a daughter?
It was unfortunate.
She was 19 at the time, so...
Not consensual. Still, there's never... No.
What's the age of consent on incest? That's a question that is asked by many a lawyer.
it's asked by one lawyer, Alan Dershowitz.
Alan Dershowitz, Dersh. Dersh is the only one who wants to know, what's the age of consent on fucking my daughter? Is that my daughter in there? Is that my daughter? That's a Mystic River reference for no one.
Yeah. There was also a Gene Hackman profile in the New York Post, and I picked this one just because of the lead on it, and I don't think you'd be able to write this lead in 2020. This is the lead. Gene Hackman looks shockingly old. Sallow skin, liver spots, a scarlet nose, a greasy comb over, and decaying yellow teeth! !
Jesus, that's the lead?
Yeah, that's the lead. If it's astonishing that one of the most revered actors in Hollywood would allow himself to appear like this on screen. It's even more surprising to see him playing a screwball to the hilt in a broad comedy.
It was like literally them being like, I want to bury the lead. You look dead.
Yeah, I think they still had, I think they probably still had old like Lou Luminick or one of those old guys that was reviewing movies for them mm-hmm. back then, where he just, you know, talks about old Hollywood and whether people
so
looked good
catty.
In the movie.
Yeah, that is ridiculously catty. That is just like, so it's really brave of you to come out side looking so disgusting. Yeah. Like,
just and it's clearly for a role.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, that's the thing.
He's 71, you know?
And if he's going to play an old man, let him play an old man. Why you exactly. got to comment on, you know, this is a problem with America, you know?
It only gets better after 2001.
Though. Unfair expectations on, you know, very old men.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. The top movies in America, the number one movie was Exit Wounds, starring Ooh. Steven Seagal and DMX.
Classic.
Wow. Yeah.
This is before Steven Seagal moved to Russia to, you know, be around Putin, who pays attention to him, and he loves that.
X gold, learn Aikido. X gold, learn Aikido.
Yeah, that's a future mashup for you. Yep, yep. Number two movie was Enemy at the Gates. That was Joe Fiennes and Jude Law doing Stalingrad.
Yeah.
Never saw that one.
Yeah.
And the third one is The Mexican Holdover, starring James Gandolfini and
still
Brad
one
Pitt
of the top movies. That movie,
definitely saw that movie.
That movie did way better than I thought.
Yeah, and you'll love this one. The top song in America, Butterfly by Crazy Town.
Oh, yo, my butterfly, sugar, baby. Hell yeah, dude. It's the 90s.
I didn't know who sang that, but I never knew who sang any of the songs from the 90s. Pretty much no one. If it wasn't Nirvana or Alanis, I was like, who?
Well, yeah, I mean,
some people say that Shifty Shell Shock is no Kurt Cobain, but
some people say he's better.
He did write Butterfly by Crazy Town, so
yeah, he was that. Crazy Town, bro.
He did. Yeah, it was prophetic.
I am Crazy Town. I am Crazy Town. He said in a room smeared with his own feces.
That's what he's doing right now.
Well, he's not lying. He really is Crazy Town. Welcome to Crazy Town.
And that is the Remember When machine.
What a machine. So that was what was going on in America when this episode premiered. Let's get into it. Employee of the month this episode.
Let me ask you something, Matt.
Please.
I noticed that the HBO Max synopsis writer ditched the whimsy for this write-up.
Right.
Did you perchance ditch the rhyming format for Bada B stories?
Here's the thing about me, Vince. I'm a professional, you know? I'm like the U.S. Post Office. Rain or shine, I'm gonna get mine. I think that's their motto. Uh-huh. And no, I absolutely did not, because I believe in what I do. So here are the Bada B stories. Ralphie bonds with Jackie, Janice being wacky. Tony cuts Chris no slacky. The sax move right out backy, and Melfi is a tacky. So it was hard.
Way better of a synopsis. I like this better.
Yeah, I think this is what, HBO Max, if you're out there, if you got execs listening, call me up, dude, because I'd be happy to, you know, write all your synopses in rhyming format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in ways that really don't explain anything about what's going on.
Not at all.
But the rhyme makes it fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, Matt, let's go through the episode. We got, we open with, Ralphie Cifaretto, mm-hmm. played by Joey Pants, who I think is, you know, probably like the greatest late seasons Sopranos character, probably.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
And so he has, what is this, like the second or third sit down with Jackie Aprile Jr. Mm-hmm, to tell mm-hmm. him to, cut it out with the mafia.
To get
stuff.
His life together. Yeah. Yeah. This episode, first of all, I mean, elephant in the room, this is the rape episode of The Sopranos.
Had we covered that yet?
No, we had. But what I'm saying is that, like, we are going to get there. Absolutely going to talk about it. But I think we should start with other storylines. Like you said, you know, let's talk about Ralphie Cipriano, because, hey, that one's a fun one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it does open with Ralphie and Jackie.
Who really needs dry shampoo. Ralphie needs dry shampoo.
Does he?
He just, he
is it a grease? Is it?
There's too little hair and too much grease, and he looks like adult Chucky. He always has. I'm sure you've talked about that. In terms of villains, well, I put him in the villain category
for
Sopranos.
Yeah.
And he's one of the worst and the hardest to get rid of.
I mean, to be fair, his hair does not always look like that. I think that was a choice. Center part receding hairline thing was a specific choice for the Sopranos.
Well, if you guys remember, and again, I don't want to spoil it for too many people who have never seen The Sopranos, but this hair might not be his hair.
That's right.
Yeah, well, you know, no spoilers.
Imagine getting that piece, like your piece looks even worse. Okay, yeah. Keep going.
Yeah.
So I have a question about that for, you know, our female guest. I have this theory that I feel like toupees would be more socially acceptable if dudes just sort of treated it like hair extensions kind of thing. Like, I feel like if a guy was like, yeah, sometimes I wear the hairpiece, sometimes I go bald, you know, it's depends how I feel that day. But I feel like every bald guy, they sort of treat it like they're actually trying to convince people that they have hair. And so it becomes like a thing that people talk about behind their back. But honestly,
I think it's also because, like, probably bald gay men do drag and are fly.
Oh, I see. So
I feel like gay men need to be the leader on this. Yeah. Like, they need to definitely lead the way on normalizing and making hair pieces accessories. But I'm hot and gay and I'm just going to do drag.
Yeah.
And this is a more fabulous wig. So it's hard.
Yeah. Straight dudes may, you know, shy away from, like, accessorizing their hair pieces because they might be confused for a gay man.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Oh, that's what I heard.
No.
But I do think that it would be a real jump forward in bald civil rights for us to start accepting that the, you know, the toupee is just a cranial accessory.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And I think people would be happier with it, too. The problem is like the difference between an extension and like a hairpiece is that I think an extension is on the... It's like sometimes it's a wig, but sometimes it's actually like, isn't it? Is that a weave?
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing to weave into unless you could connect it to like some ear hair.
Something's going on with Trump's hair.
In both cases, you're wearing someone else's hair to make it look like you have more hair. And
that's true.
You know.
But one is a lie and one isn't.
Is it? I think they're both lies.
Toupees are more lies.
Trump is wearing like his own scalp, but the scalp from behind his head. Like,
he's
wearing wrong scalp.
Yeah.
Well, he actually had like scalp reduction where his scalp is really tight back there, supposedly.
Exactly.
Ew. All right.
Yeah.
Listen, that's way too gross of an episode.
No, it is.
We can't get gross on this
episode.
Get back
to the rape episode.
Yeah, this is good. Let's keep it non-gross. Talk about Melfi being...
So like Ralphie's doing this... He's, in a weird way, he's like Jackie's most understanding father figure.
Yeah.
Because
I think so. I mean, he's right now only, you know, basically the only father figure that he has. Although Tony was attempting to in the previous episode, but his attempt kind of fell on deaf ears
Every other father figure is like, oh, but why don't you become a doctor? And Jackie Pearl's like, hey, I'm a complete knucklehead from Jersey. Like, I'm not going to be a doctor. And I think Ralphie is the only one who's like meeting him where he is and, you know, working with what he's got.
And Ralphie, to his credit, is trying to do something positive for him in that, like, he wants him to give his mother, Ro, like, less hard of a time and like is doing the best. He truly is doing the best to like bond with him in some way. And in the scene where they're...
Wow, so much slack for Ralphie here.
Well, this is before Ralphie...
for right
Ralphie,
now. He hasn't killed
okay, okay.
Ralphie hasn't made
yet.
A heel turn yet.
Got it.
At this point, Ralphie is a semi-understanding and empathetic figure because we haven't really seen much of him so far. Like, this is the only fourth episode he's been in, or the third episode he's been in. And yeah, so he's doing his best. But, you know, Jackie just is like, I'm going to go to the gym and get really buff, you know, and Ralphie, you
know. Let's go watch Scarface again. I like it when he says he's going to get the women and then he's going to get the power.
My favorite part is when he does cocaine. You guys see that part? That's a good part.
That's a lot of cocaine, am I right? I wish I had that much cocaine.
Hey, Maron!
Would that I could one day have that much cocaine in front of me.
Would that I could one day. Ralphie is doing his best for him, but you know, his advice is kind of falling on deaf ears. He hears that Jackie wants to go to the gym, and he has an idea. He is like, hey, let me drop you off, but I got to make a pit stop real quick. And he ends up going to meet with, I guess this guy is like the brother-in-law of the person who usually runs whatever. What was that, a trash business? I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
He's going to a guy who's like being squeezed by the mafia, and he's like, hey, where's my cut and whatnot? And he decides to have a bonding moment with Jackie, his soon-to-be stepson. And I have a clip of that.
You want to question a New Jersey business practice that goes back 70 years?
Hey, what is all this, Ralphie?
How to stick a shish kebab up your ass.
Why do you provoke me, huh?
This young buck, he'll fuck your wife until she moans.
Fucking wop. You began it, huh?
Fuck you call me.
You bring my wife into this?
Huh?
Put it down.
Huh? Hey, mister, come on.
Hey!
Get the fucking back!
Let go!
You all right, he gets you?
Fucking asshole!
Fool this prick! Get back! Get yourself into his chest!
What are you doing this to me?
What song did you put in there? What is that?
Let's go, kid.
Bro, that's Father and Son by Cat Stevens.
Okay. See, I was thinking you were going to go Cats in the Cradle, but I like this.
Okay, so I thought about that. I thought about Cats in the Cradle with that. I was like, that's kind of perfect. But it's like, that song, the problem with it is it sucks so fucking much ass as a song.
What if you put the Ugly Kid Joe version in there?
Oh, I don't know the Ugly Kid Joe version.
I disagree with you on it. But that was a good song.
Oh, dude, Cat Stevens, Father and Son. It's like one of the best songs about fathers and sons. That shit made me cry, dog.
Oh.
But yeah, it's for those of you who didn't know what song that was, yeah, you gotta fucking buy Tea for the Tiller Man, all right? That's like the best Cat Stevens album.
I just appreciate that song as an Italian and Armenian that I get offended on both fronts with that scene about getting the shish kebab up the ass. And getting called a wop in the same scene. It's magnificent.
Yeah, that's true. That is, it's a lot. There's a lot going on there. There's a little bit of internal conflict for Vince, you know?
Yeah, who do
you
I
know,
side
the shish
with?
Kebab,
I don't know.
Yeah, the shish kebab side of you and the fucking, you know, wop side of you. They're at odds with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I thought it was like a really touching scene in a way because he's clearly like picking a fight with this guy. And doing whatever he can to provoke him. And then he's like, he's giving Jackie like cues, like, okay, now introduce him to his desk. Now punch him in the ball. It's like he's coaching him. Like, this is the mafia's version of having a catch.
Yeah, they're throwing the ball around in the backyard.
Little apprentice. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like taking him fishing, you know, sleep with the fishing, you know.
But at the same...
Nothing from Vince? No. All right.
I guess I'm just like... I think this whole the whole premise of The Sopranos is putting like the mesh between the mafia and family.
Right.
And the idea that you, if you really love your family, if you truly love them, your job as a mafioso is really to make enough money so they don't have to do what you're doing.
Right.
So
that's
Jackie
true.
Is, I mean, so Ralphie's doing the complete opposite of that.
That is
I
true.
Think in, I can't set aside the fact that I'm, my hero is still Tony.
Yeah.
And he's still sort of the model father.
Yeah.
And it's like, however tough his love is, like that's the goal here. That's what keeps me.
Yeah, he's doing his best for his own kid, you know, AJ, and also for Jackie Jr. He is trying to get him out, keep him, you know, steering clear of the life. But at the same time, you know, the heart wants what it wants, and sometimes, and what Jackie wants is to be a little badass. And I do find it kind of sweet that he's like, "All right, I'll take you on your first, you know, extortion run."
And I mean, I think the message there is, "Do what I say, not what I do." Doesn't work very well usually.
It doesn't. It really doesn't.
That's exactly. And then there's that.
Yeah, and it is very cute. Also, later on, Tony has a scene with Chris, in which he lambasts Chris for the fact that he took Jackie to, they rob a Jewel concert in the previous episode, and so, you know, he basically says like, hey, don't do this, I promised his father, you know, on his deathbed, to that he, that Jackie would steer clear of this life. And Chris has this really cute moment where he's just like, you know, well, I'm in the life. What about me? Do you care about me? And it's just like, it's it,
no. And
I'm
the answer is no.
I'm not dumb, exactly. Like everyone says.
I'm smart and I want respect.
The answer is no. I love that. I love when Chrissy's just like, oh, what? He's like, they're having a conversation. It's right. Very like an All Lives Matter type. Like, you know, like he's just like, what about me? You know, like, what about the life of me? It's like, shut up.
Yeah, all right. It's not about you, all right? You can die in gunfire. Yeah. But this kid is special. Yeah. But you see a little bit of Tony's soft side for Chrissy there too, because he does like, he takes him in and he hugs him and he says, I love you. And then like as Chrissy's walking away, he looks back on the stairs and they wave at each other. It's like a very sweet, you know, moment in an episode also, filled with torment and sadness.
Yeah.
Also, you're forgetting one of the best lines of this episode where he's like, oh, It's good enough for me, but not good enough for Little Lord Fuckpants. And then the two FBI agents are going, wait, is Little Lord Fuckpants, is that a code? Because, I mean, how could you tell when someone's being extemporaneous when there's like another guy whose name is Big Pussy all the time?
It's true. It's a good point. You really can't tell if Little Lord Fuckpants is like, I think he's high up on the mafia list. You know?
Yeah. We need a new index card. Oh, shit.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, so there's this kind of like, I don't know, there's this episode is a lot about paternalism, and the role of paternalism in kind of, I would say, Italian-American culture and society. You know, you've got the paternalism between Jackie Jr. and Ralphie. You got Tony and Chris, and also Tony and Jackie. And you also have Melfi's relationship to both Richard, her ex-husband, who is now, they are back together again, and Melfi and Elliot, who is her therapist, and then, of course, Melfi and Tony. So
I think that scene plays into our segment, Da Real Gangsta. Which,
absolutely.
I think Da Real Gangsta is your family legacy.
Absolutely, absolutely. So. I think Da Real Gangsta is patriarchy. Mm-hmm. Also
the justice system, but mostly patriarchy.
And then fast food chicken places.
Sure.
Yeah. So are we getting there already? Are we going to that?
No, you know, fuck it. We're there. Let's go
it's
there.
The big story.
So she comes out of Dr. Melfi comes out of a session in which she tries to lose Tony as a patient. So general thoughts on this episode. Sorry, I'm skipping around, but
no, go ahead.
This is why, first of all, there's a few reasons that I really don't like this episode, and it's by far my least favorite of the season.
Really?
So far, wow. Yeah.
Because it's all about Dr. Melfi and psychotherapy, which I'm on the record as it's being my least favorite
part.
I know
you're against the entire conceit of the show. Go on.
And then they write in They write into it this additional conceit that Dr. Melfi gets raped, and this is entirely a way to use like to describe Melfi's feelings for Tony, which don't really care, and then she has to explain it with her dream sequence about the fucking Rottweiler.
Okay,
and Tony's the Rottweiler because she likes having a Rottweiler. Like, who cares? And then also, it's about her ex-husband and his feelings about Italianness, which I care even less about than Melfi's feelings for Tony. And basically, just any time that Melfi's family is on screen, I like it when they're used for comic relief because they're so insufferable. But I feel in this episode, we're supposed to like identify with them somehow and be into their whole storyline.
She's one of the main characters, though. Like, I'm like taking issue with this because she's one of the main characters, and now we really see her, not just in relationship to Tony, but in her own self, right? And the fact that she grapples with whether or not she's not, imagine if they had nothing on Melfi. It'd just be like, okay, well, I guess I'm your therapist with hot legs and I just sit here and blah, blah, blah. But no, she's got her whole internal discussion and demons to deal with. And it has a lot to do with being Italian American. It has a lot to do with being sort of upstanding versus, you know, lower class.
Right.
I love the Melfi development.
I think my problem with it is that it's not so much that they're delving into Melfi. It's that they write Melfi and everyone from her life, they write them as if they're talking in graduate level lectures all the time. Like, they only converse with each other in like grad school lecture, and it's fucking insufferable.
But she gets tired of that too, though. Like, I love how she also
don't buy it.
She's I think therapists, my dad's a psychoanalyst.
Yeah.
My stepdad is. And I know a decent amount about psychoanalysis. I love shows like In Therapy.
Right.
I live for that shit. Right. I love Breakthrough. Any therapy show, I'm there for.
The problem is that Vince has not gotten over the fact that this is the entire conceit of the show and that psychotherapy enters into it in a major way.
But is psychotherapy always this reductive where you're like, see, the gabagool triggers the passing out. And, oh, get it? The dog is Tony because they got both broad shoulders.
It sounds like you need a behavioral specialist.
Yeah, first of all, you need to go to a behavioral specialist so that, you know, whenever you have these feelings, you can deal with them in a constructive way and allow everyone to enjoy the show. But
they're doing with psychotherapy the exact thing that we don't do with this show, is like talk about like the symbolism of what the dog means.
I agree completely.
I think psychoanalysts are that obnoxious, though. Oof. I think they probably are annoying. I mean, look, I don't want to talk to them about psychoanalysis. I just want to be psychoanalyzed.
But
you know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener Salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
But it is true. The scene where Elliot and Melfi talk about the dream sequence that we just watched and analyze it is definitely particularly hard to watch. Actually, I have a clip of
Peter Bogdanovich's face almost saves it for me because it's so funny just in and of itself. But yeah, the dialogue is...
For the first time since it happened.
Empowered the vending machine?
My guilt for putting myself in harm's way.
The dog, though.
Hmm. I don't know.
The forbidden part of your psyche. Murderous rage.
Yeah, but at first, I thought he was after me.
The door said danger.
Actually, no. It said high voltage. Call NJGE before digging. Jersey Gas and Electric. Oh, my God.
The dog.
What?
A Rottweiler, Elliot.
Big head, massive shoulders, direct descendant of the dog used by the Roman armies to guard their camp.
I mean, this is as bad as like this is as bad as Janice and like one of her yoga friends like talking about astrology. Like, it's the exact same thing.
In a way, it is. That specifically, here's the thing.
It didn't need to go on. You could have cut it at like, you know, the dog. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's great when it's like comic relief. Like when they used like a few episodes back when they had Melfi's son and he's just like the worst, most obnoxious person.
Oh, ever. Yeah.
It's hilarious. But like this episode has like these extended forays into Dr. Melfi's psyche and it's all very much like psychotherapy 101.
I'll say this. I've had many dreams in my life. The amount of detail that she remembered from that dream, the idea that she'd be able to correct what the sign said in the dream and then high voltage and then call, you know, New Jersey Gas and Electric. And then also the fact that she thinks her mind, her subconscious mind, is so smart that in her dream, of course, a Rottweiler represents the Roman protectors of whatever. It's like, Jesus Christ, you really think your subconscious... It's just, Tony looks like a dog.
Tony also
he kind of just looks like a dog. Like, yeah. Like the fact that she read into it.
But this is after everything.
She mansplained her own dream.
This is after everything. The storyline of, yes. If you care about psychoanalysis, if you care about the storyline is every single man in her life is telling her to give up Tony Soprano, who they don't know is Tony Soprano, her ex-husband does, to give him up as a patient, that he is beyond help and that he needs to be referred to a behavioral specialist because psychoanalysis isn't working because he's not smart enough and he's not willing enough to actually talk about his feelings.
Because he's manipulative.
And she's starting to understand that. And the first session, the episode starts off with a session with Tony, and Tony's being completely an unwilling participant. Been a super Vince Mancini, you know, in the chair, just like, why are we here?
Yeah.
You know, and
this place a fucking Jericho.
And she's like,
I'm Armenian over here.
but then she starts to talk about, you know, because all psychoanalysts, like you guys know, then, and this is obnoxious though, they have their own psychoanalyst.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And every relationship with your psychoanalyst is a sort of a symbol of your relationship with your father,
right,
your
yeah.
mother,
yeah, Freud,
whatever,
stuff.
Freud shit, right? So it is interesting that she's like, I've been kind of, what in the beginning, what does she say? That everyone's always been, I've been looking for this father figure for so long.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then as soon as she has it, she pushes him away.
Yeah,
and she's talking about Richard in
but
that
it's just
particular
such
situation.
It's such a reductive dream. Like all the dreams, like when the dreams are so on the note. All right. So here's one of my, I never remember my dreams. I remember this one because I texted my friend Brett about it. So here's like what a real dream sounds like. And if you want to do some psychoanalysis on this, like go for it.
Let's do it.
I sent my friend Brett a text. Brett, I dreamt that there was an Arby's sandwich that you kept trying to call a Broby, but it was actually called a Brambo. I said, Brett, quit trying to make Broby happen just before I woke up. That's all.
I mean, that says a lot about you, dude. First of all,
I think we're at a live taping of Howard Stern for some reason too. So
yeah. I mean, I think it's clear you're gay.
Number one.
That's clear.
Number two, your need to correct somebody. Like, why not just go with you're correcting him?
Yeah, and of course, it's like an Arby's like sub sandwich. That's phallic. So
what if it
gay?
Really was called a Brambo though, and he's over here trying to call it a Broby like an idiot.
Yeah, but
sandwich is called, dude.
Yeah, exactly. But you have a thing where you like
it's about control.
It's about
and
control
not being able to let
and not letting go of the fact you're gay.
What about you know how they say Arby's is they have the meats? Does that?
Yeah, but even more so, you want the meats because. So I
think we're done here. That was good.
Yeah,
that
was an episode.
I think we come to a breakthrough.
Okay, but. So let's just get back to this, what this episode is about, because I completely disagree with you, Vince. To me, this is one of the best episodes of The Sopranos ever.
He's the self-hating Italian.
No. Listen,
she should have dumped Richard the first time because this guy sucks.
First of all, Richard sucks. We all agree with that. But what I love about this episode is number one, it is a standalone episode of The Sopranos. This episode could exist in any season of The Sopranos. This episode could exist as a 1 hour
short
film.
Janice in the leg. You can't. It's like all the good storylines.
Storyline, Vince. The storyline in general. Listen, it's an hour long. They got to move the story forward in some places, but in terms of the relationship between Melfi and Tony, it cements it as like it gives it
as what we always thought it was.
No, right, but the difference is that there is more, and I don't want to call it like emotional extortion or like, you know, she's not an emotional hostage per se, but
she already had the other damn dream where he gets in a car accident and she abandoned him. Like, we did thing before.
Vince, shout out your mom! to me, it is what I think is what is really good about this episode is you are getting, despite what Vince is saying, more insight into the character of Dr. Melfi and the people who surround her, and into like what motivates her and what she does in certain situations in terms of like pushing away protective men and blah, blah, blah. She gets to a point where she actually is going to get rid of Tony as a patient. Mm-hmm. And then this horrible thing happens to her where a man sexually assaults her.
Yeah, it feels like the writer is trying to punish her for that or something. It's weird.
I mean, I wouldn't even call it that. I would just call it like, if you just take it, as a show. It's a show where don't think about the writers.
I'm thinking about how they're covering characters. They're covering a dynamic that I think has already been well covered, and so I'm not like interested in it. And then they're okay, and then they're like spinning out to
this
side.
This is like one of the best. This is the best part of the show.
No,
this is what makes it a drama. This is what makes it not a mafia show.
See, this is
the difference between Goodfellas and Sopranos. This is what's the difference.
I mean,
it's so good.
Goodfellas is better though, right?
Goodfellas is not better than The Sopranos.
I mean, it's not a serialized television, but
it's first of all, Goodfellas overrated.
Anyway,
but also let me just continue. What I enjoy about this episode, Vince, you're entitled to your bad canceled opinion. I cancel thee, and which just means I muted his.
Do you like this? I mean, in comparison with last episode, you think this episode holds up to the last two?
Yes, it does. And let me tell you why. This episode, and you can call me, maybe I'm an easy audience. I'm definitely a shill. But this episode had an acting performance that made me cry. And that's hard to do with a TV show. Melfi's entire storyline, in which she's dealing with not only getting raped, but then, you know, not getting justice, and then struggling with the fact that, like, she is... has the ability to get revenge. She could do it
absolutely.
If she wanted to. And then being drawn to that moment where Tony is like, is there anything you want to tell me? And just that no at the end, fucking goosebumps every time.
God, that
bro.
Is like, that. You must love the ending of The Sopranos. It does the same thing as the finale episode where it's like, it sets you up to want a certain thing out of the show, and then it performatively doesn't give it to you, and it's like,
no,
see,
that's bullshit.
See how smart this show is, and it's like, no,
but
that's
like,
not
Vince,
why
what
we
do
like
you
the
what
Vince,
do you consider good TV then? What is
I
your,
consider
your,
good
you
TV?
You see how like it was like brilliantly done and executed? Lame. Like what?
No,
that's
it wasn't
what's
brilliantly
good TV
done
is.
And executed. I didn't believe
no,
that entire storyline. That's why I don't like it. So it gave me a storyline that's not very believable, so that it could performatively deny. The catharsis that it leads us to expect.
What's
like,
the,
no,
what's
but
not
that,
believable? What's not the believable? The rape? Well, most rapes happen by someone you know for sure.
Okay, so then there's like the cops did something with the evidence where that guy
that
goes
happens.
Free.
Rape
the
kids
time.
Are lost all
they,
the time.
And then
rape
they
kids
know
get
this
lost.
Guy's identity, and no one seeks retribution on the guy. Come the fuck.
Well,
on.
Right, but that is also a particular choice that she makes. And what's interesting about that is
a particular choice of the story that the show makes.
No, but what's
sure.
no?
But
well, the characters.
On.
They're trying to make Melfi's milieu so much different from Tony's, and I don't buy it. Like I don't buy.
Okay,
it that they're
I
that much
understand
different.
That you have a bad opinion. But what I'm saying is, don't talk. Shut up. You're talking without my consent. And what I'm saying is that, like, the struggle that she goes through, which is a struggle that I think a lot of women who have been in similar positions go through, where there are plenty of men around who are ready to take vengeance on their behalf, and they have to struggle with the fact that, like, people. Want to do this thing, and they could, if they wanted to, say, all right, go fuck him up, go kill him, or go, I don't know, whatever, trash his business, any of those things. And instead, they put it in the world of The Sopranos, and they go like, yo, straight up, you could have this guy killed. And that's a position that she's put in, and everyone around her is trying to be the savior.
Her son,
Richard, Elliot, and she is... You know, she's put
and,
in the position,
and they all
and she
say that
it.
In a way. They all say that in a way that is incredibly patronizing and also coddling, which is like, "I'll be your savior, but I can't really because, like, then I would go to jail." That's what her ex says. So you know, I wouldn't do that, but I would if. But I totally would. And she knows he's full of shit. And then obviously the son is like, "What's he gonna do?" He's like, "I'm gonna kill. I'm gonna find him. I'm gonna kill
him."
Yeah,
but he's not gonna do anything.
She's not gonna make. She's not gonna tell him.
Well, also because he's a bitch.
So then it's like, but she actually has the ticket that all of the men in her life told her was totally ridiculous to keep on giving psychotherapy to a fucking mobster.
Yeah.
And yet this is the moment where
she chooses not to cash it in, which I think is a choice that a lot of people do make. And
she holds the upper hand even over all the men in her life, even over the rapist who was like, I will, you know, they'll hunt your whole family down.
Yeah.
And I'll choose not to go with it. I'll choose not to do it.
Yeah. I think they
set up the false dichotomy of like, oh, either you seek vengeance or you don't. And I think most of the Sopranos. They set up two expected outcomes and then they find a third. I feel like this one just goes with like the other option. Like they're like, oh no, we're going to choose the non-cathartic option because we're going to try to be different. But it's like, it's not, they're just,
I think it's perfectly realistic.
It feels like they're just trying to do the opposite of what, you know, what they think that a lesser show would do, which is fine. But then they're still defining themselves based on that.
You're still making an argument for why this show is good.
This is a very roundabout way
of saying this show is good. It's like the kind of shit you're nagging the show.
No,
yeah, you're just nagging it.
You're trying to fuck the show, dude.
No, this is like an NPR storyline where it's like, well, we're not going to do what an entertaining show would do. We're going to do something exactly the opposite.
Listen,
like,
well, bullshit. How much more entertaining is it to have this woman who could clearly seek revenge on her rapist and knows where he lives to say no?
That is way more entertaining to me. It was me waiting for the obvious thing to happen.
It was very powerful, and Vince, I cancel thee. But let's move on.
Can we talk about the rape?
Aw. What about it?
Can we just talk about... I think we need to talk about the scene.
No, it's true. You're on. That's true. That's why I brought you on.
You brought me on to talk about rape. I think it was... You know, look, there's been a lot of rape scenes in cinema and movies, and they're always like... sort of like grossly sexual a little hot. Like there's always something like, oh yeah, this is like a little hot. Like this is clearly cinema rape. And they're like, they go down in history.
Yeah.
Right there. And this one is not.
It's very not.
It was violent. It was abrupt. Obviously it didn't, it goes on for a long time, but not for like an egregiously disgusting,
it feels like a gratuitous amount of time. Yeah.
I thought it was well done. I thought it was like a tastefully violent and accurate rape scene.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. It was done in a way, it's as tasteful as you can do a scene about sexual assault. It didn't fetishize it or make it like... It made it very, very real. And it's one of the most... It's the most uncomfortable... I'm uncomfortable talking about. It's a very uncomfortable...
He wasn't too evil. He wasn't like, well, it was, you tell anyone evil and I'll kill your... Like, he didn't...
Doesn't he say something like that? I think so. Well, he's evil, but he's mostly just...
But he wasn't superhuman evil. He's just a fucking rapist. Asshole.
I agree with that, and I liked all those things, but I also feel like they brought back this Richard guy who I don't care about, and they made this entire rape like about Richard's feelings about Italianness, and like who fucking cares? Like
the truth of it is you're completely correct about the fact that like some of the discourse that happens between Melfi and the other men in her life, like Elliot and
Richard,
is really hard to watch. Like, yes. Richard, like, bringing up the fact that, like, he had an Italian last name, and them getting into a fight over whether he's Puerto Rican.
I guess my point is that Richard is the problem with this episode.
It is Richard. I would blame Richard, too. But
that's just a ploy to compare Richard and Tony that I'm supposed to not believe is working. But I think it does work. I think stacking Richard up against Tony is great.
I do think that's
good,
too.
And I also think the broader themes around like Italian Americans and like passing judgment on like the mob and then the stereotypes of Italians and blah, 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 blah. And like,
people are
going to
think I'm a thug just because my name ends with a vowel.
Yeah, that to me.
Another
thing,
I never learned to read.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'll say that everything that Richard says and does in the episode makes me want to fucking die. yeah. And Elliot, that's the case too. But Elliot, like Peter Bogdanovich, plays that character in a way that's so perfect and obnoxious.
He has a funny face, and I like
he has a funny face that like
he had a funny face.
He's just it, like even though like the moments that they have that are earnest between Melfi and Elliot can like you know just be incredibly annoying, I do think that he has these moments that are perfect. In fact, I have a clip of my favorite Elliot moment ever.
Because the justice system is fucked up, Elliot. Richard's got his attorney looking into this at $300 an hour. But meanwhile, that employee of the month cocksucker is back on the street, and who's gonna stop him? You?
Jennifer. Civilization.
Oh, don't worry.
I love that his thing is like, so like, who's gonna stop him? You? And he's like, bro, I would.
Yeah.
Like, I would in a second, bro, but like, civilization will crumble if like people just start doing Batman shit. Like I love that for him. He always brings it back to like, Law and Order was established. The Magna Carta.
In medieval times, they had trial by combat.
So good.
Yeah, it's just like that. It's such an Elliot response to it that it's like it. It's just
that's
so
what
good.
I mean. I feel like the Melfi Elliot dichotomy is perfect, and it kind of accomplishes all the things that they were trying to accomplish with the Elliot Richard dynamic without
making
Richard
me want
to crawl
worst.
Into a hole and die.
But isn't this episode supposed to also close the door on Richard? Do you know what I mean? She's let him back into her life, and I believe this is the episode where it's like, yo, homie, you tried, and he did try, but then he kind of messed. He definitely fucked up.
I forget what happens after this point.
Oh,
but
and he says
he
could kill him with these hands, and they do a close up on his little ball.
Yeah,
balled
the close up.
Fists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyways, Richard is the worst, but to me, I love Lorraine Bracco's performance. It's like the first episode of The Sopranos in which I feel like Lorraine Bracco really puts on like an acting clinic where I'm like, holy shit, she is good. Because she, you know, for the most part, Lorraine Bracco's always kind of played a similar type of character. You know, obviously it's like her in Goodfellas and her in this are completely different, you know, characters. But it not, I don't know, there's not... There wasn't the same spark that you saw with Lorraine Bracco in Goodfellas.
She's all over the place. Not all over the place. In a good way. She does everything in this episode.
In Goodfellas, she's turned up to 11 the entire time. Like She's just like a hardcore singer. Like, she's yelling the entire time. She's amazing.
Yeah, she's doing
at
a lot of yelling, a lot of crying, a lot of... whereas, like, she has pretty much just played... You know, even keeled Melfi, and like occasionally she'll break out of the shell a little bit, get drunk, and you know, have like those moments. But this is an episode where they really explore like the emotional dynamics of a character. And like, I'm not obviously, you know, I don't know that much about art, and especially acting art, but like, I do think that she is incredible in this in a way that I think you know, deserves some respect.
Sure. Can I talk about the most positive development of the show, in my opinion, in this episode?
Which is
Furio's coming out as like the sensitive member of the crew.
Yes, please.
You know, 'cause they're in the room, and they're the other thing that happened in this episode is that Johnny Sack has moved to New Jersey, and Johnny Sack has the large wife that they do a lot of mama jokes, the your mama so fat jokes on. And then in the midst of that, Furio's like, I like a woman with something to hold on to. And if we could go to favorite scene, my favorite scene is when Ralphie is telling a Pope joke. And then there's Furio's reaction to it, which is my favorite moment of the episode.
Maron, look at this pair. How many Nubletons does it take to screw in a lipo? There's only candles in Naples right now. The Cardinal of the Church controls that racket.
That's a good one.
You like it, you can have it. Use it on your paisans.
We don't have those bulb jobs. They don't translate.
We don't have those bulb jokes.
Yeah. People would get very offended. You don't want to offend people.
We don't make the joke about the Pope.
We never make a joke about a Pope. but like Furio definitely starts kind of being more than just like the badass enforcer as the season runs along. And this is definitely just like a taste of it. I love it.
I wish Meadow had been in the room for the Yo Mama jokes. They're just having their little like cipher, like they just saw the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or whatever.
Yeah, she would totally just like accuse them of cultural appropriation.
This is the most 90s part of the show, this episode. Is this Yo Mama cipher? Which is
they're just
reading. They just found out about it.
They're reading from their dad's old Snaps book.
They needed Fez there to MC the Snaps contest, like he did. In that MTV show.
That show that lasted too long. So let's move on to the final storyline of the episode, and that is the third act. Of Janice stealing the leg.
Oh, thank God for Janice.
And so Janice has, I think, maybe three scenes in this entire episode. And each scene is just the best. I fucking love her so much.
Best
so we
part
start
of the
out,
show, by far.
By far. I mean, you know, in a way. we start out with Janice... back at home in her mother's, you know, old home, doing what she does best, which is search for buried treasure with a metal detector. And I actually have a clip from that.
I was downstairs cleaning up.
Why'd you change the locks?
The minute that Ukrainian dye job was out the door.
Don't mess with the Russians, Janice. That's all I'm gonna say.
She can have her leg back when she returns Ma's record collection. And don't say you wouldn't have done the same thing.
Don't fuck with me on this, Janice. Get back the leg.
Tony, those records are yours too. It's sad that you don't care. And those old albums, they're a window into Ma's soul. In fact, I'm making a documentary. The World War II generation and their music, exemplified by Ma.
Who the fuck are you kidding? You're gonna sell them on the internet.
I have work to do.
Yeah, right, cleaning up the cellar. Good luck finding the lost Dutchman's gold mine, Janice. You make more money working a real job.
Right. Like the minute I'm out of here, you're not gonna have contractors downstairs tearing apart the walls.
Oh, Janice.
It's so good. Like she's so earnest about that. She's just like, cut the crap, Tony. You and I both look for buried treasure in this house. You know it and I know it. And it's like, whoa. Like Tony's like earnestly going, oh, Janice. Like,
yeah, oh, Janice is great.
Like the fact, like he's like, you are just trapped in this delusion. It is so funny. And the fact that also I'm making a documentary
like about the World War II generation and their music.
I know I say this a lot, but I've known so many Janices in my life who I'm like
Janice is the repository for like every writer's obnoxious person that they met in liberal arts college.
Yes, yes, yes. The one who telegraphs their plans to do great things, but first they need $1,000 from you. You know what I mean? There's a clear grift going on, but there's also like an earnest, like she, I've said earnest a lot, I feel like, in this episode. She does want to do things, you know, like I'm sure that, you know, in her mind, she's like, someday I am going to make a documentary. But she's not going to, because first things first, she needs to sell the musical theater records, you know, and to get the money to make the documentary.
She's so hopelessly manipulative and cheap. You know what I mean? Just being that cheap and that lazy, but having a whole like story, just like a monument of lies dedicated to like shielding yourself from real work is amazing. Like hats off.
No, she's built like a really amazing house of cards.
That's but there's also some irony to Tony saying like, you know, it'd be less work for you to just get a real job. And then it's like,
right,
you know, you're in the mafia, right?
So then we move on with the Janice storyline to a point where Janice actually does have her comeuppance visited upon her by someone who I would describe as the most empathetic Russian hitman. This is a character, I don't think you ever see him again, but every line that he says in this scene is just fantastic.
Excuse me. Wait a minute.
You let go of me! Let the fuck go of me!
I don't want continuation. You give us leg and we go.
What leg?
Don't do this to me. Don't push me to edge. Repent on yourself.
What the fuck? Do you know who I am? Do you know who my brother is?
Mother, what? What did you say?
Motherfucker! Are you people really so callous?
Fuck you. You are callous.
Cause he's right.
Yeah,
he's not lying. Like he comes in there. His first line is "Excuse me," and please, and then tells her to repent on herself. And all he wants is a leg back. I mean, this is all reasonable stuff. Aside from like punching her in the face, I feel like he's the most righteous character
which
in that
she's
scene.
Had coming for a while.
Oh, she needs a good punch.
Needed
in the face.
A good punch. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
the whole job of the mafia leg breaker guy is to make the person getting their legs broken feel like they brought it on themselves. And in this case,
true.
She really did bring this on herself.
She totally did.
All she had to do was not steal a one-legged woman's prosthetic, and
it's actually super easy not to do that. And and it's even easier. To once you have done that, be like, oh man, this is mean. I shouldn't do this. And the fact that she's like talking about her records, like those records mean the world to me. How can you be so callous? And he's just so perfectly like, fuck you. You are callous. It's just like, that is, yeah, that's true. She is way more callous.
Got a point there, buddy.
So then the third and final act of the Janice steals a leg and gets her comeuppance storyline is her in the hospital and being able to spin this moment into something meaningful, which which only like a master manipulator, especially one who masterfully manipulates themselves, could do. And so, yeah, I have a clip from that as well.
And setting up like one of the future best storylines ever in The Sopranos.
Yes.
I told you not to mess with those people.
I was supposed to be married at this point in my life.
Yeah, so?
The man I love died. I stole a woman's prosthetic leg, Tony. When did I get like this?
You really want to know?
When Richie died. To that time, I was functioning at a very high level. I think there's only one trajectory for me.
Really?
God? I've hit bottom, Tony. But it's odd. Because I feel born again in the Lord.
You can go now. Billy needs to see you. Follow the blue line.
Got a little edit in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sets up you know, Janice finding God and how she immediately turns that into a grift.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh God, yeah, it keeps going. She's got to be the victim of her own story always.
Yes.
So there's, I mean, she's already the victim.
Yeah,
has to layer on a I didn't have it coming to me.
Yeah, it's weird that someone with a victim you see this a lot where people will have a victim complex, but their victimhood stories are all made up, but they are victims of other things. And you're like, why don't you just, you can just say the real shit and no one is going to judge you. You can have like,
say, I shouldn't have stolen her leg. That was dumb.
Yeah. Or,
you were right.
Or like I was in abusive relationships, you know, my son won't talk to me. Like there's so much actual victimhood going on, but the victimhood complex that she has, she invents different reasons why being caught in her grift and called out that it's like, no, you don't understand. It's not a grift. I'm a victim of this other shit that I just made up. It's like this weird defense mechanism, you know?
Yeah, no, she had like she uses the symptoms to avoid acknowledging the disease.
Speaking of which, she also in the hospital, the first thing she says to Tony is, I broke my wrist and three ribs. She's lying about the ribs, I guarantee. Like they never get into that, but I guarantee she's lying about the ribs. And also the amount of pain that she's in.
Yeah.
Like when she's just like, oh, this is the bottom. And the doctor just comes in like, all right, we need to see you in billing. Like, yeah. There's no way she's actually that hurt.
I've torn the cartilage between my ribs, not even broken them. And like when that happens, like you can barely talk because like anytime you breathe in or out, it hurts intensely. And if you've broken two ribs, you're going to be like, hey, you're talking like this the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Janice invoking Richie at any point, just at any point.
Died.
When he died, you know, I was functioning at a high level, just whipping that out. Because now she's, you know, effectively a widower. She's probably going to keep using that forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, to her, she's a widower, even though she murdered him.
And to the one person who knows what she did.
Right.
Yeah. And who bailed her out of that situation.
It's like one of those things where she keeps up the kind of like the delusion that she lives under, even in front of people who like know she's lying. It's incredible. It's just an incredibly written character. And Ada Turturro, brilliant.
Yes, so good.
Chef's kiss.
All right. Before we get out of here, we got some emails from the listeners.
I love email time.
Yeah. I think it's way funnier for them to have gone. This is about the last episode with Chrissy's Got Made after party. I think it's way funnier for them to have gone from an old basement to a rented banquet hall. I think that their after party with strippers and cold cuts is just Vesuvio, based on the strip mall Italian restaurant artwork on the wall. Mm. Oh, and the bar looks familiar too. Also, Vince, stop hating on dream sequences. They're the best. I mean, Annette fucking Bening.
Yeah, he's right. Stop hating on them. They're great. Everything they do is great.
More to come.
Mm-hmm.
Another email. So a friend of mine also has his wedding plans fucked up and is having a family ceremony with a Zoom hangout Wednesday night for friends. As part of this, we have scrounged Cameo to get the best messages that $300 can buy. The best one was Joseph Ganascoli, aka Vito, doing a three-minute rant outside his cigar bar, which includes multiple gay jokes and then references to fucking on the wedding night. Enjoy the GIF.
Oh, my God.
And it's just, Vito gesture, making a fuck gesture with his cigar.
Bro, like, I mean, I know you paid a lot for it. I'm sure there's certain rules and laws that Cameo has, but if you could send us the audio of that, we would very much so appreciate it. You know what, Vince? That's something we have to do.
We have
to start paying... going to Cameo and paying like former Sopranos cast members to promo the show, you know?
Yeah.
Unless they have their own podcast.
That's a problem. They all have their own podcast. You're right.
But this is the only Sopranos podcast.
We're going to have to get a sit down between us and Cameo and the other Sopranos podcast to decide how much of a cut that they get for ex cast members.
Jesus, we're going to get whacked. We'd be the first people to get whacked in the podcast business.
I can't wait, dude.
Anyways, all in all, fantastic episode. The only malapropism that I found was they said hair apparent again.
Yeah.
So I loved it. Vince, you loved it.
Solid B plus.
Francesca, thank you so much for coming on to this episode.
No problem. I took it very seriously, as you can tell.
That's what we needed.
Feel passionate. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, follow me at FrannyFio on Twitter, Instagram. Listen to the Bituation Room podcast.
Hell yeah. Do it. Frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, concerns, anything you want to talk about with Sopranos or whatever. If you just want to say hi, patreon.com/frogcast that has bonus episodes of a different podcast that we do in which we talk about movies and stuff. But also, hey, if you listen to Pod Yourself a Gun and you're like, I love this and it's free, I should give them some money. You know what? Donate to our Patreon. We'll take it. And then guess what? You can listen to other episodes of things where we talk about other things. So patreon.com/broadcast. Vince, what's the Google voice number?
415-275-0030.
Yes. And just real quick, first You can get merch now at teespring.com/store/frotcast. And that's F-R-O-T-C-A-S-T. There's Pod Yourself a Gun shirts and also Frotcast shirts. And also today I would like to give a special shout out and introduce our new producer for the show, Brent Flyberg. How are you doing? Well, I said, how are you doing, Brent? But his mic is currently, I mean, he could unmute and say, what's up?
Hey, what's up?
There he
is. Hey, thank you, Brent. So, Brent,
thanks for having me.
Thanks for producing our pod. We love you and love you everywhere out there. Everyone out there, I love you all. And until next time, don't stop believing. Don't
stop. You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.